This is Press Play on KCRW. I'm Madeline Brand. Whether you realize it or not, scientist and author Temple Grandin has probably influenced the way you think about autism. She was one of the first people to write about it from the perspective of a person actually experiencing it. Her 1995 book, Thinking in Pictures, was one of the first to show autism and neurodiversity as a strength, as a gift. Temple Grandin is also an expert on animal behavior and livestock handling. She says half the cattle in the United States today are handled in facilities she designed. She credits her success in her field to the way she thinks. She thinks in pictures. Here's how her thought processes were depicted in the award-winning 2010 HBO movie Temple Grandin. Claire Danes played her.
Can you bring everything you've seen to your mind?
Sure.
Even if it were an everyday object like, say, shoes?
I see all the shoes I've worn, and my mother's, and other people I've met. And you have three pairs. One needs a new heel. And then she's in newspaper ads and TV ads. And...
Wow.
Can't you?
Temple Grandin's latest book is called Visual Thinking, The Hidden Gifts of People Who Think in Pictures, Patterns, and Abstractions. Temple Grandin, welcome to Press Play.
Great to be here.
Well, so you write in your book that the world comes to you in a series of associated visual images, like scrolling through Google images or watching videos on TikTok. And so I'm wondering if that film clip we just heard is accurate in how you look at and process the world.
Yes, that film clip is accurate. Now, I can also, like, I remember one of the I loved all the vintage shoes they had on there. And like that high top sneaker, that's what we had in the 50s. Now, I had a lot of fun on the beach when we were wearing some of those shoes. So now I'm seeing hunting for shells on the beach. You see, it's associative. How did I get from a sneaker to the beach? Well, I wore those kind of shoes as a child, and they were associated with a lot of great memories. You see, it's associated. It's not random.
Yeah. But a lot of people remember in pictures, their memories in pictures, but they're not so-called visual thinkers. So you roughly speaking break down people into two categories, verbal and visual thinkers. What is the difference between a verbal and a visual thinker?
A lot of people are mixtures, but in my book, Visual Thinking, I have a whole chapter on the research on two types of visual thinkers. I'm an object visualizer who thinks in photorealistic pictures, kind of stuff we're good at. Is mechanical things, art, and animals, and photography. Now, the other kind of visual thinker thinks in patterns. This is the visual spatial pattern thinker, mathematician, computer programmer, chemistry, physics, good at higher math, where I'm terrible at higher math, and they're actually two different kinds of thinking. And I'm an extreme object visualizer.
An extreme object visualizer. And then, so these are the visual thinkers, and that's in that bucket. And then there are the verbal thinkers. I think I'm one of those.
And a lot of people are mixtures. But when you end up with a label like autistic, dyslexic, or ADHD, then you tend to be maybe an extreme mathematician or an extreme object visualizer.
Interesting. Okay, so and how did these categories, how did they get established in the first place?
Well, I kind of figured them out for myself a number of years ago. And then I found research, and some of it is earlier research is reviewed in my book, The Autistic Brain, found research that backs this up. The other thing I did when I was working on my book, Visual Thinking, was I've done a lot of design jobs for, you know, major big companies. And I went back through all the people I worked with, welders, really skilled people with drawing that laid out entire factories. And I'm going to estimate that about 20% of them were either autistic, dyslexic, or ADHD. And the way they got started was a single drafting class or a single welding class. And they owned shops, and some of them have a whole bunch of patents. And a big concern I got today is these kids today are getting screened out because of draconian algebra requirements. And we need them to fix things, to design all kinds of equipment.
Well, so let's talk about that. Algebra is something that you yourself, you write, that you weren't good at, and that actually prevented you, your lack of success in algebra prevented you from going into a field you were interested in, engineering.
Well, I would have gone into engineering. I had to drop a computer class. I had access to the exact same computer that Bill Gates had. I had to drop the class. I had to drop a physics class. I had to drop a biomedical engineering class. I can't do the math. But when I go back and I look at all the projects I worked on, there's two parts of engineering. There's what I call the clever engineering department. These are the people working out in the shop, and they're inventing equipment. And then right before COVID hit, I went on a bunch of trips, and I realized we have a skill loss issue. Like right now, if you want to build a state-of-the-art poultry processing plant, you're going to get all the equipment from Holland. I also went to two pork plants where most of that equipment came from Holland and some from Italy. And what's happening is in the U.S., they're getting screened out. We shut down the shop classes 25 years ago, and there's stuff that we simply don't make anymore. And the kids that need to be building things are playing video games in the basement. Now, let's get back to the two types of engineering. Your degree to mathematical engineer, let's say in a big food factory, they'll do the boilers, the refrigeration, the wind loads, water and power requirements. But then all the clever people out in the shop who maybe barely graduated from high school invent mechanically complicated equipment that's used in many, many different kinds of industries. And we have a serious skill loss issue right now.
And that's because we don't teach that anymore. We don't have shop class anymore. We don't have hands-on learning the way we used to decades ago.
Well, worst thing that was ever done is taking out the hands-on classes. And I think finally educators are realizing it was wrong. Texas has put some of it back. Minnesota has put some back. I heard about a school in California. But the kind of thinking where I think in photorealistic pictures, so for example, I would understand an animal because they're not verbal, or how a piece of machinery works, it's a different kind of intelligence. Because some of the verbal and math thinkers think you have to have algebra to think logically. No, they don't. And what really concerned me when I was on a book signing for visual thinking is they had it in a school out in California, and the principal didn't even know what my kind of thinking was. He didn't even know it existed. This is this October I had that conversation.
Wow. And so there's been a great emphasis on verbal thinking, on logic, on reasoning, on testing whether or not you can understand a complex paragraph and what is being said by the author, or as you say, if you can do an algebra equation. And those are what we test.
Well, that's
skills.
Right. Then after I just was on a video call, beautiful new poultry plant just opened in Canada. Gorgeous. I got a video tour of it 2 days ago. All the equipment is from Holland. So I went online and I looked up Netherlands educational system, Italy education system. And I have some of this in a visual thinking book, but I looked it up again. And at ninth grade, the kids can either go a university track or a tech track. And they don't consider the tech track something lesser. And the Italian, I hadn't looked up before. They even have kind of an art track you can do.
Well, what about the idea that America is the fertile ground for creative geniuses who come up with inventions that change the world? The Steve Jobs of the world, for example. Mark Zuckerberg, or people who have come up with ideas that fundamentally change the way we interact with the world.
Let's discuss Steve Jobs. He was not a programmer. He was an artist who came up with the easy-to-use interface for the first iPhone 4. And then the mathematical minds had to program that phone and make it work.
So Steve Jobs was the artist and Steve Wozniak was the engineer?
He was the techie. And in my book, Visual Thinking, we discussed the relationship between Steve Jobs and Wozniak, the two Steves. And Wozniak wanted to put like more expansion slots and all kinds of extra stuff on the computer. And Jobs is going, no. We got to make it simple for the consumer to use.
Mm-hmm.
And also make it look nice.
Yeah. Exactly. So what do you think schools should be doing? Let's say a principal is listening to this conversation and she wants to help her visual learners. What should they be doing now to help their children succeed?
I want to put a lot of hands-on stuff back in. I was just at our school, it's just right, Rocky Mountain High School. science class yesterday, and they're planting plants and measuring soil condition. That's hands-on stuff. We need to be putting a shop class back in, cooking, sewing, woodworking. I did sewing as a child, and a lot of the skills I learned in sewing transferred right over to steel. Only difference is the material's hard. It's the only difference. Huh. Now, I put a lot of that stuff back in. I think kids need to get exposed to a whole lots of stuff, art, music, theater, tools, all kinds of things. And then you can kind of see what they gravitate towards. And the object visualizer on sort of skilled tradespeople, they're not getting replaced. And we've got a huge skill loss issue in what I call the clever engineering department.
Mm-hmm. You write about the PG&E power lines, and in this state, we have been talking a lot about how they contribute to wildfires, devastating, deadly wildfires, because of all the quote-unquote deferred maintenance. How could they easily be repaired, or can they be easily repaired?
Oh, they can be repaired. They can be repaired. There's a clip that holds a big insulator on those real big towers that years and years ago cost 59 cents. And if you look at how those big towers are made, that insulator is going to rock a bit, and it's going to wear that clip. And they're going to have to go in and replace those clips. I think it's ridiculous that when the wind blows 45 miles an hour, you have to shut down the power so the wires don't fall off the towers. No, they can be fixed. It's going to be expensive because you've deferred the maintenance. Well, you see, us object visualizers, I can see how that bracket would wear. And somebody's verbal goes, oh, we'll deal when the wire comes off. Or I'm going, let's replace the clips.
And is that just a question of will, or is it a question of the fact that there aren't enough object visualizers on staff at PG&E?
Well, I think it's a decision that was made by the verbal thinking suits. And the problem with the suits is they just don't see it. So you really do need all the kinds of minds. My grandfather was the co-inventor of the autopilot for airplanes. So he's an MIT-trained engineer, mathematician, working with an autistic guy who was probably a visual thinker. And the autopilot invention was stolen. And the stolen version was in every warplane in World War II. They needed a lawyer. Yeah, huh. You see, just definitely a place for the verbal thinker.
So what you're really saying is we need both, and we need partnerships, and we need people to work together.
And I've done a lot of talks to big corporations, and I said, you need people that are neurodiverse for the skills. I want to see those kids that are different getting these good jobs, and we need those skills.
Well, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It was great to be here.
Great to have you. Temple Grandin, professor of animal science at Colorado State University. She's a world-renowned autism advocate. And her latest book is called Visual Thinking: The Hidden Gifts of People Who Think in Pictures, Patterns, and Abstractions. Thank you for tuning in to KCRW and tuning in every day or whenever you can. And thank you for giving back. This is KCRW's season of giving back. We're so grateful that you're here for us. And now we need to turn it back around and ask you to support us. Give us a year-end donation at kcrw.com/give. We have an extra added incentive today. Tonight at midnight, we'll be pulling a winner for a brand new iPhone 14. Talk about giving back. We're going to give you a brand new phone. Well, we might, but you have to be a member or renew your membership or up your member by going to kcrw.com/give. 800-600-KCRW, 800-600-5279. Who knows? You might be a lucky winner. We are lucky to have you in our lives and lucky to have you listening and lucky, so many things to be grateful for, really, at the end of the year. KCRW.com/give, tax deductible donation. And we really do rely on you. This is a vital service and you are the vital part of it. We really cannot do it without our listeners. Another thing you can do is you can say no thank you to a premium, even though we've got really cute premiums like socks and hats and tote bags. You can say no thank you to all of that and donate to the LA Regional Food Bank, because that is also a worthy organization. So you'll give to two great organizations in one by going to kcrw.com/give. And remember, again, your contribution is tax deductible. So many reasons to become a member or renew your membership. Please do it now. We really do rely on you. KCRW.com/give. Coming up, we'll remember the documentary filmmaker Julia Reichert, who died recently. Her movies, including the Academy Award-winning American Factory, explored the shifts in the working class. So stay tuned for that next on Press Play.